This episode is sponsored by the NHS.
Now, a hot topic on our NetMums forum is the COVID-19 vaccine and whether it's okay for pregnant women to have it.
Lots of you are asking for the facts, and that's something we've got plenty of.
For example, here's one. Between May and October last year, 96% of pregnant women who were admitted to hospital with COVID-19 symptoms were unvaccinated. You can book your vaccine online or find a walk-in centre at nhs.uk/COVID vaccination.
Now, on with the show.
You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by NetMums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
On this week's show...
At what point did you think, I'm actually quite good at this. This isn't shit. This is quite good.
still not. Okay.
Come on. I've got your book in my hand.
But just anyone can write a book. It could be shite.
No one would publish it, man. But before all of that... Welcome, my loves, to another episode of The Glorious Sweat, Snot and Tears. I may need to be found in a pool of sweat, little bit of tears, no snot yet this week, because I am getting near the stage of being able to move into the house that we've been renovating, and I feel a bit of mosh, and I'm very exhausted. This is the biggest sit down I've had for about 10 days. Wendell, what's going on in your world?
My world? It's much more chilled than yours, in honesty. I'm a little bit starstruck about this guest.
Come on, tell me.
Well, she's been with me through many a pivotal moment in my late 20s.
Yes, that is true.
She was there when I got ready to go out on no doubt disastrous dates. She was there, she was there when I got dumped. She was there when I went often with you out for make me feel better after being dumped. And she was even there when my daughter started getting into music. And there's a note on my phone called Annie's Songs That Chloe Likes that we used to listen on the way to swimming to her show. And Chloe, age 6, would say, I like that one, Mummy. And so we'd have to write it down so she could
find
it.
That is so cute.
So I'm a little bit like, ladies and gentlemen, it's Annie Mack.
Welcome, Annie M. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much, ladies. I'm really good. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You'll have to just excuse me being a bit
wobbly. I got a bit emotional there.
But does it feel, we can't be the only ones who feel like that. Is it weird being part of people's lives who feel so attached to you and you're like, I don't know who you are?
It's just lovely, to be honest. Like, radio is this really intimate medium,
isn't it?
You're right in people's cars, you know, you're in people's kitchens, in their bathrooms. So there's a real kind of familiarity with people towards me. I'm down for it. Like, I like it. I love chatting to people. I love connecting with people. It's my favorite thing to do, is just conversations. So I'm really happy to chat to people about it. And really touched, actually, that I could, you know, the work that I did could affect that many people. And it's when you hear those little personal stories that it really kind of, like, resonates. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
She was quite cross with you, in honesty, when you stopped.
Oh, a lot of people were. A lot of people were incensed.
Oh, it wasn't that bad, don't worry.
but just angry, because you, like, as radio does so well, you're kind of punctuating people's lives. So my job on the radio was a kind of, hopefully, like a positive punctuation in that kind of something that made people feel a certain way, the music that I played. So I think, I don't know, like, obviously, I know, because I've been in radio this long, that someone else comes and does your job, and then, like, 6 weeks later, everyone's, like, really into them. So it's fine. But I think because I've been around for that long, when I left, it made people be introspective about themselves. So it's a reminder of time passing for people. And sometimes they don't want to be reminded of that.
And I think as well that it's a reminder that people can leave you. Like, it feels a bit like an abandonment.
Yeah. God, this is a bit deep.
Annie. You left us.
But ask her first question. Christ, we'll all be in tears.
Okay. Well, the first question is related. Have there been any sweaty, snotty or teary moments in your house so far today?
Nothing today. Today's been quite smooth. The kids went up and out to school okay. But this week in general, it's been less sweat and snot, more tears from my son, who is 8, who will not go to sleep.
Oh, welcome to our world. It's rubbish.
Now, this was going to be because you posted something on Instagram that just, I was with you. You posted a photo of yourself at the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
Saying, this is where we are every night.
I've been there.
Yeah. Well, so just to give context to those who don't know. So my kid hadn't been sleeping for a long time. And it had become just normal, as it does in households when you're just busy and you have to get on with things. It just became normal that we would sit on the stairs every night. Now, we could sit in his room, but I was like, no, you have to not have anyone in the room. So if we'll sit near you on the stairs, then you know we're near. And so it was kind
of comforting. You are doing it by yourself. La, 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 la.
Yeah, exactly. So then we went away for half term and I got some sleep and I got some rest and I was like, we're going to come back and we're going to do this differently. I'm going to speak to him. It's going to be, you know, man to man, woman to son, whatever. We're going to do this together. I want him to feel invested in this. I'm going to explain him my reasons. I want him to learn, you know, that it's good to be able to sleep by yourself so you don't have to depend on anyone else. And sometimes it's okay to be afraid, and being afraid is like part of daily life. And, you know, it's about not being afraid of being afraid. And I was getting really deep with it. So I came back.
I think I need this chat.
We made a plan, right? And the plan was I was going to buy walkie-talkies. And the walkie-talkies would mean that I could sit downstairs and he could sit in his room. And whenever he was scared, he could talk to me.
I like this.
It's a brilliant plan.
Because when I did that Instagram post, I had about 200 people giving me different types of advice. But I really liked the walkie-talkie one. And he liked that because he's 8 and he's a boy. So, and all week we've been kind of like, you know, I need to dad.
Over and out.
Over.
Roger.
Really, really fun. And it doesn't get tired. But so we had a couple of nights with him on the walkie-talkies and it went really well. And then I don't know what happened. I think my husband forgot what the plan was and he ended up sitting with him till he fell asleep one night. And then the next night, it all went to pot.
You can't break the plan.
He broke the
plan. Can't break the
steel.
Plan.
And then so my son was up to, oh, I tried everything. Like I gave him an audiobook. Then I gave him some kids meditation, wave sounds. He was still up at 20 past 11. He got himself so wired.
And then they get overtired. And then you can't switch off.
Yeah. And it's just like we're arguing with each other at 20 past 11. So what are we doing? Just go to sleep. And I think part of it is because he knows how much I need him to go to sleep. So it's his little way of thinking, you're really bothered by this and I'm getting all of your attention right now by not sleeping. So I think I'm just going to stay awake for as long as I can. So, yeah.
So have you made any progress or is this where, is this stalemate?
No, that was the night before last. And then last night he slept. It happened again. And then eventually I let him come up. We've actually set up a small mattress beside our bed on the floor. So he sleeps in our room when we're there. But at one point he said to me, he was talking, I was trying to do my thing again about saying, you know, you have to, it's good for you to be able to, you know, if you want to do sleepovers and stuff, it's good for you to be able to like not be afraid when you go to bed. And we have to learn how to beat this and I'll help you. And then he said, but I'm only 8, Mom. And then I was like,
You're only eight.
And I think, I don't know, like, I find that with the older kid, because I only have 2, but with the older kid, they are always made to grow up quicker than the youngest kid, because you always measure them against your younger child, don't you? And it's like, they are the older one. So it's relative, but he's still only 8. And my husband's like, just let him sleep. Let him sleep in our room.
But it's hard when you're spending half your evening sat on the top of the stairs.
Oh,
you know,
man.
I can see why it's like.
I know. What really resonates to me about this is the thing of you're really torn between getting the plan together, sticking to the structure, making progress, and then the but they're only 8. That constant.
And then just being tired. It's the end of a long day whenever you're trying to kind of, so you just capitulate, don't you? You give in. And that is why parents all over the world spend at least 2 or 3 years of their life sat on the stairs. And that's you just end up doing it.
Well, at least you made it to the stairs. our 7-year-old, soon to be 8-year-old, until very recently, would only go to sleep if she was holding one of our feet, i.e. if we were sat in the chair next to her bed and no had one leg way up on her pillow.
I love
sorry for
Flo
laughing, but it's so comedy just to thought.
I just love her.
She would just clutch it like a teddy bear and off she'd go to sleep.
But
and
then you'd have disgusting to
and not in a sock. But then you'd have to try and retrieve said foot.
So you'd be wiggling it out of yeah her grip.
And for some reason, and I don't know why we never sorted this out, it was we always had a rocking chair there. So it would be the thing would be rocking and you'd be trying to retrieve your foot. Oh my God.
You couldn't make it up. That's incredible.
It's just too much.
Well, they sell those things now, don't they? They sell fake heavy hands that you can put on because you know sometimes
yes
babies
on
like
babies they're like stuffed on the oven bum gloves aren't
yeah
they
no
stick
and
on
you
their
weight
bum
your baby
that
down
is
with
creepy
it.
I think that's creepy, a fake hand, mind you.
Well,
I
I'm gonna tell you this, so you talking about the walkie talkie, one of I might have said this on the pod before, so sorry listeners if I'm now just being a dementia ridden repetitive old bag, but our friends had one of those walkie talkie baby monitors where if the baby yeah cried in the night, you could kind of press a button and go, shh, shh, shh,
like,
shh, shh,
it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And one night, when the baby was like more a toddler, it got into bed and it was like, night, mummy, night, daddy, good night, wall, because it thought the shushing was the
was
wall
coming from the wall.
Oh, so they stopped shushing on the monitor after that. Yeah. So I thought it was a bit weird.
The walls of ears.
God, the scars amazing we're inflicting on our children. Oh, so do you ever wish you were just at work playing records rather than doing bedtime?
Not yet. Not yet. I know I sound like I'm really conscious of not wanting to sound like I didn't like radio because I absolutely loved it, but it was just time to go. So I still every evening I'm like around 5 o'clock I'm like, wow, I don't have to go anywhere. And it's not that I am kind of relieved not to be playing the records. I miss the music. I miss being in a studio with 2 hours of live music, loud music in my ears every day. Like there's something wonderful about just being in a room with loud music.
It's very soul enriching.
It is, yeah.
Concentrated doses of music, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I miss that and just the kind of freedom of that. But I'm still enjoying being around in the evening more because it's still such a novelty. Having not been around in the weekday evenings and a lot of the weekend evenings for my 8-year-old's entire life, pretty much up to last summer. So it is pretty exciting still just to be about.
So even the rowdiest of tea times can't make you think, oh God, the studio.
Yeah,
just take me back.
What I've learned is that like there's actually loads of time in the evening. So they, you know, you sit down, we have early dinner around 6:00. And then, like, you don't really start bedtime till like 7:30, 8:00. So you have like an hour and a bit after dinner just to do nothing. So
kick around,
When my husband's home, sometimes I would go off and like, I don't know, go for a walk, go for a jog, go make a call, do something away from them so that I can feel a bit more ready for the bedtime. But we share the bedtime too. So it's not always on me every night, which is cool.
Yeah. And you keep your boys quite, well, very much out of the public. Oh, God, I can't speak today. Annie, ask the question for me.
The public eye.
Yeah. I got it. I was getting
I think everyone got there before you went.
Yeah.
was that a conscious decision? Did it kind of just evolve out of nowhere? Is it something you still feel really strongly about?
I feel strongly about it for me, but I'm very, like, my first rule of parenting is you cannot ever judge another parent. It's just, you just don't know what's going on with people. You don't, people have their own agendas, their own ways of doing it. There is no right or wrong. There's only your way. Everything changes all the time. You can't, like, it's just, I just don't ever do that. So all I can speak of is for my own experience, and I don't want them on online because I, as in their faces, because I just want them to have agency over their own kind of digital footprint, I suppose. And I do think that when we get older, there's going to be a situation for our kids where they're it's all going to click in terms of like the whole privacy thing and the lack of, and they might just want to not be traceable, or they might not want to have their lives plastered out over the internet. So it's more just saying, listen, it's on you. Like, it's up to you if you want to do this. And Yeah, it's just that. It's that simple, really.
I'm wondering if that generation as well, because kind of our generation and maybe the one behind us grew up pretty much behind closed doors and then vomited their whole life everywhere and plastered it across all the walls and everyone else's walls. If this lot might, their rebellion might be going the other way and being like,
right,
dude, yeah. mum, stop putting pictures.
Exactly.
Calm
if it's
down,
all you know,
private.
You might rebel against it. Also, like, I am the last generation of people who grew up without a mobile phone. Like, I got my first mobile when I was 19.
Snap.
So I got through all of my teens.
Yeah, university,
and I'm so grateful for that. And I'm so glad. So I think that must mean something. I haven't quite like figured it out, but it means something that it must have something to do with me not wanting to put them online as kids.
So I'm just going to go back to your very sad departure from Radio 1, which I'm, as you can tell, still slightly mourning.
Do you still listen to Radio 1, by the way?
I do. We still listen on the way to swimming. We still have the playlist. It's still named Annie's songs, but we've just moved on. It's now
well
cars.
Done.
It's
well, you made the change.
Well done.
So you were given some pretty serious flack by, there was a particular piece in the Mail that I read where you were accused of doing women a disservice for putting bath time over baselines, which I think is...
I didn't see that piece.
I'm really glad you didn't. Don't read it.
It's pretty shocking, actually.
Well, I did it.
You've resigned to be with your kids, you know.
Well, no, you see, this is where it was all mixed up, like... that was one of the reasons why I left Radio 1, and I'm not ashamed of that. And I kind of thought, it was like, should I say this? And I was like, yeah, because this whole exit has been nothing but completely honest and authentic. And I want to give people the real reasons why I'm leaving. And I think my listeners deserve those real reasons. And I think it would help them understand if they knew my personal motivations. But, you know, obviously I had spent 2 years writing a book and really enjoyed it. And I wanted to give myself more time to do that. There was all that. There was my podcast that was going really well. So I knew that there was other things going on that I owned, that I was loving, that I wanted to give more time to. But the kind of motivating reason for doing it then was because of my youngest kid starting school. So he wouldn't be around in the daytime anymore. So I wouldn't see him till kind of 3:30 every day. And then I'd have to go to work at kind of 4:35. So it's like, he's four, man. He's four. I want to see him. And and it's you know, my oldest
Shock
son is
horror.
Eight. My oldest son is eight. And he's not, you know, he's only ever known me not around at the week and in the weeknights. So I kind of feel lucky that I had a second go and I had a second kid and was able to be like, you know what? I know this time that I do want to be around. And I feel really grateful that I'm in a position where I can leave my job and have other work to do and make this work for me. So I see it as nothing but a positive thing. And most people, nearly everyone, in fact, the Daily Mail is we know what they're like, but most people were really,
Cesspit.
Really... Well, yeah, they just it's just any excuse to be down on women, basically. And what they should have seen is what the kind of career that I'd had up to that point, which is kind of... you know, pretty hardcore.
Well, and the career that you've continued that just happens not to be in a studio. You haven't just stopped.
And anyway, you don't need to justify yourself to anyone. You're a woman who luckily lives in an age where she can make choices about her own life. And
well, that's the most feminist thing you can do.
I know. It's to be celebrated, man.
To make choices. Yeah, yeah, it's about choice. So I thought that the move that I made was kind of quite a feminist move, because I've never felt more in control of my career, more powerful in terms of what I want and how I want to achieve success. I've never felt better about that side of things. So for me, it was like, this is a power move, but it's not a power move in the typical way of kind of, you know, moving up in the world. It's a power move in terms of becoming more fulfilled as a person. So I was delighted. Take that, Daily Mail.
Well, and who's to say up is like, up doesn't have to mean like climbing a career ladder or, you know what I mean? Like,
well,
up
that's
is,
the thing, isn't
up
it?
Is fulfilling yourself as a human being, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you found that you're good at more than one thing, you cow. You can write as well as play bloody records.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's probably a bit more than just playing bloody records, you know.
It's not really, Wendy.
I think this touches on a really interesting point that I wanted to raise to you, actually. You're kind of, I think one of the reasons we all did, we still do feel like we know you, even though we might not, is because you're very authentic and open and honest. And so you're easy to relate to, and we feel like we're sharing with you.
Mm.
And the way you kind of parent, and you're, you know, like you share the sitting at the top of the stairs on bedtime on Instagram and everything like that, is you're very open and honest about that. Do you think it's important? Do you think as a woman in the public eye, you have a duty to share, or is it just your nature? Like, how has that come about?
I think there is a kind of dangerous trend of women feeling like they have to share, overshare maybe, in order to get clicks and likes. And I think if you put that next to men, it's very different.
God, that's so true. And I hadn't really thought about it like that before.
Yeah. But women are naturally, listen, I'm not kind of trying to gender stereotype, but we're better at sharing. We're better at communicating. We are better at, it comes more naturally in my experience that women do that. So it makes sense that if you've got a nice online community of people that, you know, and you're naturally online all the time, that you would do that. For me, I enjoy doing it when it feels right, but I don't kind of force myself to do it. And I am victim of that in the past. Like anyone who's on social media for a long time will know that as soon as you go on Instagram and you do that regularly, you have this pull that you feel like you should be sharing something on Instagram. Mm. So it's like, oh, I've been on Instagram. Oh, everyone's done this post. I need to do a post. It's like, no, you didn't need to do a post until you looked at Instagram and it made you feel like you needed to do a post. So what I'm trying to really fight at the moment is that kind of, reward system that Instagram kind of forces upon you, and just not look at it very much. But if I genuinely feel like something, like that thing on the stairs, then I'll do it, but I won't do it otherwise. And I kind of write essays a lot and put them on my website. And that's a nice way of sharing, because it's kind of a nice way of me like trying to exercise my writing muscles, but also kind of being, you know, sharing about my life. But it's never like a move. It's never like, okay, this week I'm going to share. It's never like considered or strategized in that way.
And we can tell it's written by you. I mean, with so many people in the public eye, you know, it's like some 20-year-old that they hired in the office who wrote February's posts in like July last year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. God, I'm so naive. I just wouldn't even think that people would do that. But it must be.
There's a lot of that going on. You can hire kids to do that for you.
Wow.
We're sounding like the three old witches, us three. You do realise.
Listen, witches are great. I'm down for being a witch, can I just say?
Now, back to the COVID-19 vaccine. We want everyone to have a healthy pregnancy, but unfortunately, we know that being pregnant puts you at greater risk of getting seriously ill with COVID-19.
And sadly, that's not all. Getting COVID in pregnancy could also cause complications, including your baby being born prematurely. The best way to protect yourself and your baby is by having the COVID-19 jab.
The good news is you don't need to wait until your baby arrives to have your vaccine or booster. It's safe to have at any stage of your pregnancy. You can book in at nhs.uk/COVID vaccination.
Now, on with the show. Now I'm going to talk to you about your book.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Thank you. You made me cry.
I'm just going to sit and stroke it actually for a bit. Because
really?
I just really love the cover.
Yeah, really. It was just, there was just some bits of it where I was like questioning. It made me question decisions I've made as a mum.
And why you made them.
Why I made them, and why you... I don't know. Where did you pull it from, Annie? Is it been in there the whole time?
Obviously it has, but...
Did you know it was there?
No, it's the first question everyone asks, and I still struggle to find an honest answer for it, because I just... Obviously it was there, but I just don't know... I don't know where it came from, but it came from in here.
So you weren't like walking around thinking, I've got to tell this story, I've got to tell
this
story.
It wasn't. There wasn't like a burning story to write. What happened was I did a course and when I turned 40 and I really wanted to write something. I had to write something to submit to this course. So I wrote a piece.
Where was the course?
It's called Ink Academy. It was a really good course. It was in London. I liked it because it was one-on-one as opposed to sitting in a group of people having to read your writing. I was mortified at the prospect of that. So it was just me and a tutor, and you meet the tutor every 3 weeks and you deliver them 5,000 words and they critique that. So by the end of the course, you have like 35,000 words. So it's like, okay, that's a nice bulk of words. And by the end of my course, I was felt like I'd kind of, I could feel like I knew what it was. So I kept writing and I finished it after that. But it wasn't until I started writing that I realized that I had something to say. It's like, let's say like you go for a jog and then you realize, God, I really want to run a marathon. It was kind of like that. It was that vibe. It's like until I started.
Can't say that's happened, Danny, but okay.
Me neither. I'm just trying to like give an example, but it's like a muscle. Like it's like a muscle that you haven't used. And then when you start using it, when you start writing, you realize that it's something that you want
to
do.
But wait, tell me. So it's week one and you're meeting with the guy. Or is it or a lady?
It's a girl.
A girl.
Susanna. Amazing.
And were you just dying inside at having to show her the first bit of writing?
I felt nervous.
Because that feels like being naked to me.
Yeah, really, really nervous. And I was like a mature student in university, you know, like really overeager, wanting to learn, wanting to know everything. Like, tell me more, tell me more, tell me more. It just felt so good to learn something brand new. Like, I had been doing the same thing, the most amazing, exciting thing that I loved, but the same thing for 20 years. So to actually sit and like actually go through this process of learning something new, and I'm, you know, I still have so much to learn and I find that really exciting. It just felt so good. It felt like it was my own little secret thing that I had away from everything else and everyone else. It was just mine. It was really indulgent. And I just loved it.
Wait, two more questions on this trip. I swear I'll give her back to you in a minute, Wendy. So... A, 5,000 words. I know you've got 3 weeks to do each set, but that when you're a mum and you've got a job, that's kind of a lot of time that needs to be carved out. So A, how did you do that? But and then B, when at what point did you think, I'm actually quite good at this? This isn't shit. This is quite good.
still not. Okay.
Come on. I've got your book in my hand.
But just anyone can write a book. It could be shite.
No one would publish it, man.
The publishers, you can't just pull the wool over their eyes. They do have an ego.
They would say, oh, Annie, yeah, this is lovely, but we're just going to send it off to this woman who lives in a cupboard who's going to rewrite it for you. Do you know what I mean?
Honestly, I got the paper back yesterday and I was looking at all the quotes because they put on all the quotes from the papers and stuff. And it was just like, I still can't believe that it's any good. I don't know if you ever can.
Listeners, it is.
I don't know if you ever can. I don't know. I think maybe that's a good thing. And I don't like dwelling on it too much. I've realized that I just have to keep going forwards all the time and just write the next one. But so in answer to your question, I because it felt like this kind of illicit secret that was just mine, right? This is when I was doing the course and life was really busy. It felt like a kind of, it just felt super indulgent doing the writing. So I would do it anywhere and anyhow and any time I could.
Like on the bus, on the number 34 bus.
In the back of Ubers, sloping off for the weekends for an hour, getting up early before everyone else. Any time I could do it, I would do it. And it felt so exciting. And most of all, just frustrating that I couldn't spend more time on it, basically. And that was, again, just such a motivator for me to find more time in my day to write. And now, as I'm sitting talking to you, 8 months after leaving Radio 1, I'm in this lovely position where I've had 2 days this week where I could just turn my WhatsApp off, no meetings, nothing. I had like 7 hours to write.
That's amazing.
I just like push everyone out the door, make coffee, go up to the office, and I'm in just writing my tits off for 8 hours. And then I go to back and I pick up the kids from school. I'm in this daze. I'm just like, oh, there's people. It's like, it's so mad. And when you're in this deep into a book, which I am now.
So this is book number two, which is your baby number four, which is underway as we speak.
Yes. And it's like basically you have this whole other world in your head, a fictional world, right? And it's just there all the time. And there's people in it that you're getting to know really well and that you're getting to really like. And at any given time, your head can just be like, zoop, I'm in that world. So like there's a war going on. There's so much shit in the world. And it's for me, I feel so lucky that I can just go to this place in
escape
my head
to your
and
world.
Occupy my time in there. It's just so wonderful.
And did this one come out in the same way? Like you didn't know it was there and then you just started and then out it came? Or was this one a bit more, right, there was a theme that I never picked up on in the other one. I'm going to go with this. How did it happen?
Well, the scary second book, did you have
yeah,
that?
Yeah, but my thing, Wendy, is that because I feel like I could do better than the first one. So for me, it's like I want to be better and I think I can be better. So I am motivated to improve, basically, on the first one. But I was also very reactionary to how I wrote the first one. So if you have read the first one, which you have, it skips up back and forth in time loads.
Yeah.
So it's a pain in the hole to try and make everything work because whatever year you're in,
constantly jigsawing.
Whatever songs on the radio, whatever uniform the policeman's wearing, whatever make of car, was that hospital on that road in 1990 in Belfast? I don't fucking know. Like everything was it was an absolute, the detail, the granular level of getting things right, which I had to do because it was Belfast.
You can't mess it up.
No. So this one is like, right, I'm writing this in one place over the course of 1 year and the place is going to be within walking distance of my house in London. So that's what I've done. And so there's a very different way of writing it. It's also very much in from the perspective of one person and it's in their head in the now. So that's another really interesting way of writing.
You've made it, yeah. Did the first one have to be Belfast? Was that really important to you?
I didn't think it was, but
but out it came.
But out it came. And then about a third of the way through writing it, I was like, what
you were like,
the
why the fuck have
I done? I lived in this city for 3 years when I was a student and I was drunk the entire time. I can't remember it. And so it was a lot of kind of like Google Maps printed out on the wall. I had this amazing group of women who I managed to assemble, who were friends of friends and colleagues. And we had a little WhatsApp group. And at any given time for the course of about 6 months, I was like, what did you wear for your Holy Communion? Does this shop exist? What happens here? What happens here? What did you do for your A-levels again? When did you get your A-level results? Everything. And they were so patient. And
that's a great idea to assemble a group to help with that.
Yeah. And I think they enjoyed it.
I could do one of those groups for day-to-day life.
What's my name?
Yeah. Where do I live again?
What does my kid need to do?
Well, we do actually have one, which is called Black or Blue. And it's all about which bins we have to put out that week. And that's how it started. Yeah. But now it's like, shit, it's World Book Day next week. Has anyone got any green leggings? Because she wants to go as a fucking green cat.
Yeah.
Which is actually genuine, listeners, if anyone's got any green leggings. Although World Book Day will be over by the time this goes out, I guess.
Well, I in my new, like, I'm a great parent now crusade, which is ever since I've kind of given up Radio 1, I'm like, I'm here for you. I'm there. I'm going to, I joined the year 4 WhatsApp group. My kid's in year 4. I joined the WhatsApp group this year, 5 years too late. So I was like, hi guys. I know your kids have been in school for 5 years, but I just wanted to say I'm here now and I'm Oisín's mom and it's great to, but they were hilarious. They were taking the piss. They were like, great, so you're going to do some flapjacks for bake sale next week? And I was like, hold yours.
My killer strike when I found the WhatsApp group a little too much was instead, and I knew I couldn't leave because that would have been like the most passag move in the world.
Yeah.
I just signed my husband up to it as well.
Yeah.
So that the love was shared.
My husband has been the one in it this whole time.
And then he
was like, it's your turn now. So
here we go.
Well, I feel like I met your husband listening to your podcast because your interview with him was just amazing. And it's had some really amazing press. But was it really hard? Like, did you end up almost bickering about the bins while you were doing the podcast? You know, was it hard?
It wasn't too bad, actually. Like, we've talked, obviously, we've had a lot of discussions about his mental health and stuff, obviously, because we're married and it's a journey for him and for both of us. But the actual chat wasn't too bad. It was quite a revelation, actually. It was, you know, a really genuine, and I was really just kind of proud of him and impressed by him in being able to speak so openly and articulately about his own personal shit. So the conversation was fine. And it was more the aftermath, to be honest, because we were on half term. And it, when the episode came out, for those who don't know, it's my husband T talking about his adult diagnosis of ADHD and the kind of anxiety and stuff that came with that. Mm-hmm. But there was such a landslide of people getting in touch about it. And it's still happening now. It's been a couple of weeks, and it was people from our lives and also people, you know, not from our lives. And I've just never had, since Radio One, leaving Radio One, I haven't seen such a massive reaction to anything I've done. And it felt like it resonated with a lot of people. I think COVID meant that there was 2 years of people being introspective and kind of actually being able to observe their own behaviors and be in rooms with people more than they often would have previously. And I think there's a lot of people thinking.
Well, and I think neurodiversity is like new to us grown-ups. We didn't grow up in a world where
completely
people knew who they were or what they were.
Yeah, or knew to even ask.
Yeah.
True.
So we need people like him to kind of take us on the journey so that we can all get our head around it for ourselves, don't we, really?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people recognized behaviors or resonated with stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be the amount of people who are going to go and try and get referrals now for diagnoses.
But that's a great thing if people can get to know themselves better.
Yeah.
So was he your favorite? You've done so many amazing interviews on your pod. You don't have to say he was your favorite just because you married him, but who are your favorite guests that you've had on your podcast, or are you not allowed to say?
Oh, I am. Yeah. Like, you know, we've interviewed some amazing people, like really well-known, successful people, creative people, you know, from your Zadie Smiths, your Steve McQueens, and then great musicians and stuff, artists, actors, all that. But I think I have two favorites, and both of them are people that are not famous at all. And one of them is a guy called Paddy, who is a Birmingham guy who was homeless and addicted to heroin and spice for pretty much his entire adult life and a lot of his childhood life. And he talked about his life and just told me the story of being homeless and then how he got off the streets and he's now a peer worker for Shelter, the charity. And I don't know, I just think those conversations with someone who's never really had a conversation like that before, who's not practiced at speaking publicly and who is just 100% real. I just found that one so deeply moving and I love that one. And then there's another kid called Jamar, who's 19, whose brother was fatally stabbed, and I wanted to speak to someone about knife crime who kind of had been in there from the inside and could speak about it with real life experience, and he was amazing as well. So those are the ones that will stay with me, I guess, the most. Those kind of very raw conversations, you know, where you're not finding these people through agents or, you know, reps. It's, you know, and they're harder to find, those ones, because, you know,
way harder.
They're real people, but also you have to make sure there's a duty of care that they're okay talking about their lives and their traumas. And, you know, so it takes a lot of prep, but it's worth it if you can make it happen.
Now, something I was keen to ask you. I read an old interview with you, I think it's in The Guardian, where you said your greatest achievement was that you liked yourself.
This is, you know, the amount of people that bring this up, it's mad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it still your greatest achievement?
Yeah, I don't know. It's still something that I feel. And again, it's not something that you think about a lot. It's like, do I like myself today? Yes, I do. Like it's not really, it's just...
It's
a natural peace. It's a peacefulness. That's so it. It's feeling at peace. Yeah.
And that's all anyone could ever wish for anyone, right? It's peace.
Yeah.
Peace of mind.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, has anyone seen, it was going around Twitter like a couple of weeks ago, a woman overheard her kid. She was lying in bed and this little kid was like preschool saying, "Good night, Mom. I love you. Good night, Dad. I love you." And then she said, "Good night, myself. I love you."
I was just like,
that's very cute.
That is it's all you'd want for anyone forever, right?
It is, isn't it? And I mean, just thinking about it.
So profound.
I don't think it's right that I said that in answer to the question of greatest achievement, because it's not really an is it an achievement?
Oh,
is
it's
it
definitely an achievement. It's definitely an achievement.
Is it? Okay.
It to really
batter
is.
Away all the self-doubt and the external critics and the... And the bollocks.
But what I mean is, I think that maybe that's something that I was really lucky enough to be. It was a kind of nurture thing than that, rather than a something I've had to learn. I think it's because of my upbringing and maybe because of my family that I've been able to feel like that. So that's not really an achievement, is it? It's more just circumstantial.
If your family could write a book about how to raise a nanny Mac, then that would be amazing. We'd all follow the guide.
That would be amazing.
Now, from one extreme to the other, we're going to close with the really big questions. First up, what's for tea and who's cooking?
I don't know and I don't know.
I thought you were going to say I don't know and I don't care.
Yeah, we've got nothing in the house. We're
is
not
that a normal cooks. State of affairs.
We're not cooks in this house. Neither of us like plan a meal or look forward to cooking a meal. It's very much like something that you have to do. It will probably be pasta and cheese and butter for the kids. I'll make them eat some carrots when they're watching television. And then we might have some vegetarian sausages and some potatoes. It's so boring.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad, because it makes Wendy and I feel really inadequate when we have guests, because we ask this of everyone and they say things like, well, we're having swordfish.
Yeah.
The children like it grilled, but we prefer it pan fried. So we do it
My
twice.
Kids would no sooner eat a blinking swordfish unless it's battered and in the shape of a finger.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I think there's a heel of bread and maybe any butter left.
I'll go get the one last tin of beans from the cupboard of the 16 that have already been consumed this week.
The gusto box gets delivered around now. And as long as there's some limes and some coriander in there, I think it'll be a...
Yesterday, there was no food in our house and there was a cake sale at school. So I said to Tim, just get them like double cake and keep them going until I can go to the shop.
I always feel like I've won when it's a bake sale for that very reason.
Yeah, they get fed. It's fine.
They get fed. Yeah,
right, it's Annie. Friday. Yeah. Annie M, very tricky question for you now.
Don't know. Yeah, this could go either way. Go on.
This could go either way. You have to imagine that you're tucking Annie O and I into bed. We are your boys. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have to, you're sat at the top of the stairs. I don't know if you're
sat at the top of the stairs.
And sing us your family lullaby.
We don't have a family lullaby. I do a thing where I do, it's so cringe. I do a do you know how much I love you thing. And then this is my youngest, who's just turned 5, and he'll go, no. And I'll go, okay, here's how much I love you. And then I do the classic, all the way up to the moon, 66 times around the moon, all the way down into the sea, to the bottom of the ocean, then up, round a mountain, down a volcano, through a thing, and then back. A gazillion
times.
Oh, I like
that. That's
and then
nice.
He goes, and then we blow each other a kiss. And then, because he doesn't kiss me now, either just the big one, we have to blow the kisses. And that's it. But I don't do singing, I'm afraid.
Neither do we. Don't worry.
Yeah.
It's for the best in our case that we don't.
If I sing in my house, I get told to shut up. Like if I sing half a line, it's like, stop! They will not allow me to sing.
Well, on bad singing, so a friend and I, for our sins, and I don't know why we did it, used to run a play group on our day off every Friday morning. I don't know why we did, but anyway,
it's
we did.
It's incredibly brave, yeah.
I think it was about to close and we felt bad, so we kind of felt like someone had to. Anyway, so we did it. But as part of it, we had this woman called Becky who used to bring a guitar. And at the end, she'd do a little sing-song for the kids, you know, like the wheels and the bus and stuff. Anyway, sometimes Becky wouldn't come. And me and Emma and Layla would have to sit on these tiny little chairs and sing to the kids.
Yeah.
And every time we did that, no people came the next week. That's how shit we were.
It's ideal, though, as a kind of like organic way of shutting down the playgroup. It's just every week.
And eventually it wound down. That was the end. That's amazing.
Well, on that note, Annie McManus,
Annie, you've been amazing.
Oh, thank you, ladies.
What a lovely chat.
Wait, we didn't ask one thing. When can we have the next book then? When's it?
Well,
when
the Mother paperback's out at the end of March, and then the next book is going to be the following spring, if all goes to plan. Yeah.
Does it have a name yet, or is it top secret?
No, it doesn't have a name. That's the fun bit. We'll get to that. I'm still in the hell of trying to get the structure right.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
Wish me luck. Thank you. I'll take all the luck. Thank you so much. And lovely to meet you both.
Thanks, Annie.
Nice to meet you. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.